You're listening to the Ink and Paint Folk Podcast, a look at animation through the women and non-binary folks who make it. I'm your host, Cassie Soliday. This week is all about Dino Ranch. Celebrating teamwork and friendship, Dino Ranch introduces young audiences to a magical world where dinos roam a working farm and sanctuary. Full of adventure, fun, and problem-solving, the ranch is managed by the tight-knit Cassidy family, which includes Ma, Pa, and their three children, John, Miguel, and Min. Today's guest is animation supervisor Caitlin Menard. Obsessed with Disney movies, World of Warcraft, and Lord of the Rings, Caitlin found herself wanting to work in CG, but not as an animator. That was a surprise, but she wouldn't trade her luck for the world. She shares that experience of pivoting career expectations, how she transitioned from college into the workplace, and what her workload as an animation supervisor looks like. So grab a beverage of your choice, sketch while you listen if you like, and enjoy.
Hey, my name is Caitlin Banfield Menard. I'm a 3D animator, and I am currently supervising animation on Dino Ranch, a show that's airing on Disney and CBC right now. And what about animation that brings me joy? It's the new shows. It's like they're always changing. There's always new characters to animate. There are different chances to try out new fun animation every single week, pretty much, with new episodes. Things are constantly changing, and that's one of the main things I like about animation is it's not the same thing every single year or every single day. Just that animation studios are usually filled with, like, fun people. That's one of the greatest things about animation is that the people you work with are actually so much fun, and there's such a range of people and artists. It's great. It's really fun.
That's awesome. Yeah. So kind of going back to your origin story, can you give us a brief sketch of what your childhood looked like and what inspired you to pursue animation?
Absolutely. So I grew up in Ottawa, Ontario, and I've stayed here my whole life other than when I travel. So just about every single summer when I'm not in the city, I actually went to a cottage. We're pretty privileged, my sister and I. My parents had a cottage, so we'd spend 2 months of every single year at the cottage doing swimming lessons, spending lots of time outdoors in the woods and like looking for little animals, watching Disney movies on VHS when it was nighttime, and just, yeah, spending a lot of time outdoors and drawing a lot as well and doing arts and crafts. So that like all that arts and crafts and sort of studying animals really made me have an appreciation for it. And I guess once some like movies like Lord of the Rings came out, I was just obsessed. I loved Lord of the Rings. I love and video games as well. So World of Warcraft, Monster Hunter were pretty influential games. And I just really wanted to do like more of that. I didn't realize at the time that I could do that as a job, but that was probably the main thing, is that just being exposed to those movies and video games at a younger age really influenced me, I think. I mean, I have a cardboard stand-up Gandalf in front of me who was supposed to make this sort of seem normal for me, because it's weird having, I guess, an interview not in front of someone. He was supposed to make it less weird, but I'm like, this is just strange now. But yeah, I love it. Cardboard Gandalf standing in front of me right now.
That legitimizes you so much, Caitlin. So like when you were, working on your craft and like trying to break in, like, did you have any obstacles you had to overcome?
Yes. So essentially I found high school, art in high school is usually pretty easy for most artists, right? You're usually at the top of your class in art class because not everyone wants to do art, but everyone is taking this art class. So you just kind of you can coast based on what little skill you have. So breaking into, say, like the animation course? Like,
to show a portfolio to get into the animation courses? Or, because, like, it's a little different. Like, you could be a good artist, but you don't necessarily know how to animate yet. So how did you go about that?
Exactly. So that's actually exactly what I did, was I made a portfolio to get into the program based on the requirements. And that's how I got into the animation program. And it's it's interesting because I initially applied to the game development course at the college. And I hoped to get into that because I really wanted to make like games like World of Warcraft, and Lord of the Rings is kind of the same. I'm like, oh, this would be really cool. Animation was my second choice. I didn't even realize that animation was what I really wanted to do, but I didn't get into game development because I didn't have that math credit. So animation ended up being the one I got into, but oh my gosh, am I ever glad I did. So I made that portfolio, managed to get in to the 3-year program at Algonquin College, and that's where it started there. So the main big hurdle I had to adjust to was the workload. High school art class workload is nothing compared to the animation one. Oh, any animation student knows this. Once you get into animation, you are giving up your social life, you're giving up your weekends, your evenings, everything, because you are trying to get the skill that some people take their whole lifetime to perfect, but you're trying to do it in a short period of time. So yeah, it was a challenge. I'll just say that, like, the adjustment, I was very frustrated for the first few months of animation.
Yeah. And like, how was that transition? Like, how did your like time management improve? Like, do you have any like insights to offer us if like there's a listener who's going into college and struggling right now?
So I guess as long as someone takes it seriously, like takes those deadlines seriously, they'll be fine. I think that animation, at least the program I took, was so jam-packed with different projects, you couldn't afford to not be working on any something at any one time. So in that way, you were always like, okay, I've done this, I'll move on to the next thing, and you're not even thinking about it. And by the deadline, the night before, you just, or a few nights before, you sort of work on what needs to be done for that one deadline. So as long as you take it seriously, every single project, you will eventually develop this sort of time management skill and habit. And another thing that I would suggest is get a planner, like an agenda, the calendar view one. That's the one I actually still use to this day after 8 years of being in the industry, ever since my third year in college. I've had a calendar view planner. And I write down my work hours, what needs to be done, which day, and that all started in school, actually. It was very helpful for finishing my film.
So it really is training you to be a professional when you go to school.
It is. It very much is. If you take it seriously, oh yeah, for sure. I'm very thankful that they were hard on us in school, because it's a bit better in the industry, but it's very good to have that initial shock over with.
Yeah, for sure. What do you think was most shocking about when you finally got into the industry?
Maybe the fact that I didn't have to work overnight anymore. That was one thing. I was like, oh, we actually don't have to do overnights. But in terms of what maybe was harder or more difficult was, I would say, the number of frames you have to do. So if you're doing a frame count thing, we had to now produce 30 seconds a week, whereas in school you're working on 3 seconds for 2 months. That's your project is a 3-second scene and you have 2 months to do it. Now you're doing 30 seconds a week. That's your quota. So I think that was the biggest sort of adjustment there.
That's a lot.
Yeah, like, it seems like a lot.
Yeah. So what was your first gig in the industry?
It was the Tom and Jerry show. It was a flash show. Yeah, Tom and Jerry. And it was done sort of with the old style. It had like preset poses that we sort of had to work into our animation. And it was a really great show to start on.
Did you work at a service studio?
I believe so. So a service studio being, our work was outsourced to us to animate.
Yes. Yeah. So like when, because you mentioned like having set poses and everything, and I'm wondering, like, was there ever an instance where you would get the board, you'd get the scene, and there'd be like this outrageous special pose? Would you then have to like go off the board and like design in and make a new pose, or how did that work?
Sometimes it's like that. So if the, because the boards weren't done in-house, I believe, but we had all the rigs or the builds done in-house. So if there ever was a special pose, yeah, you could easily sort of take one of these special poses that we already had or just the normal rig and then draw those pieces yourself. It's a bit weird with the 2D symbol animation. It's not quite traditional, right? Because you're moving the parts around and making it look like a fluid sort of drawing that's moving. So it's actually kind of, it's not so bad making a special pose. It's kind of fun too, if you're matching it up to it.
That's cool. Yeah, I thought that might be fun to do. Although on the timeline you're probably given, that might be a little harder.
Yes, that's another thing. You definitely have to work a few extra hours in the beginning just to make up for how slow you are and using the software and everything.
Yeah, how did you speed up your process?
Essentially, just working extra hours, like quite a few extra hours, especially in the beginning. It's just mm-hmm. worth it to, because you're never going to be fast immediately, right? You learn over time how to get faster, and I'll speak about that a bit later too. You basically need to, as a new animator, put in a couple extra hours every day for yourself, not for the studio, not if they're asking you to do like unpaid overtime. Do it for yourself to get faster, to learn how to overcome different challenges, because some challenges will take like an hour or two to figure out how to work around in a scene, like an action in a shot. So it's kind of worth it to put in a few extra hours right at the beginning, just so you get up to speed, and then you can start experimenting more with your animation, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. I think that's good advice, because I definitely remember being slow at the beginning of this one art job I had, and I definitely stayed a little later to improve my time. So that makes perfect sense. But yes, don't work free overtime. Do it for yourself.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so I kind of skipped it here, but I want to go back a little bit. Like, how long after you graduated college did you get your first job?
It was essentially immediately. We had our studio day at the college, and I believe I was working for Pip Animation, the first studio I worked for, about 1 week, week and a half later, which was nice. It was awesome.
That's amazing.
It was really good. Luckily, we were at a time in the industry when there was lots of work in Ottawa, too. So it was very fast, to the point that I skipped graduation because I didn't want to go to graduation if I was already working in animation.
Yeah. Wow. Did you graduate, though, and just not go to the ceremony? Or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly that. There was a ceremony, and it was like, why would I go? I just went to this program to work, and I'm already working. So.
Yeah, you got the job.
Yeah.
That's amazing. That's wonderful. Like, can you, like, speak into I'm having everyone at Dino Ranch answer this because, like, this podcast mostly interviews LA-based people just because that's where I live and that's my network. So cool. I'm kind of curious your perspective of the, you know, the animation industry in your area. Can you speak into it? Like, what's it like?
So in my area, which is the Ottawa area, I guess, it's mostly 2D. So Harmony and Flash-based shows. And for a long time, up until this year or last year, it was all frame rate animation as well. So we have maybe, you know what, it's not even too many studios, maybe four or five studios that do 2D animation. But it seems like it was constant 2D animation work. But they were all frame rate studios as well. Whereas it seems like Toronto and Vancouver were already on salary too. So it was a bit challenging, but it's pretty healthy here. I mean, I think Pip has been around for 25 years at least, maybe a little less than that, maybe just over 20.
What can I ask? Cause I don't know. What is a frame rate?
Okay.
Like the way you're using it, I'm not familiar with.
So, well, frame, it's just a rate of pay or a way of paying the animators. So if you have a 24 frame scene, which is 1 second, then you are getting let's say the frame rate, the amount is $1 per frame. You do that 24 frame scene, you now have $24. Whoa. So yeah, so if you get like a batch of 400 frames for the week, and that's all you have, you get $400. Now if you get a tricky batch, let's say it's 300 frames, like, and you only get 300 frames, you're getting only $300 a week. And the rate doesn't change based on how many characters of the difficulty, usually. There's usually a set rate for the show itself, like right at the beginning, or based on your seniority, I guess, as an animator. Not seniority, skill. Mm-hmm. So, frame rate can be difficult at times like that. And other times it can be easy. Like if you get a really easy show that has like a 95-cent frame rate, but you can do like 1,000 or 1,200 frames, like you're still making a little bit more money, I would say. Mm-hmm. Probably not as much as you were in LA, but Ottawa living costs are a little cheaper.
Yeah, that's the one thing about LA rates is like, it's nice to have a union to kind of like set minimums and stuff like that.
Oh yeah. But,
yeah. So that's nice. But yeah, things do get a lot lower when you go outside the union, and the union, I think, at least ours, only covers like the LA County area. Yeah, so that's really interesting. So like when you, and if you don't want to talk about this, that's okay. But like in the beginning, you probably had a little bit of a struggle, you know, until you got your speed up and everything. Like, how did you make it work?
You just keep going because, and I don't mind talking about this at all. So you just keep going. You just have to keep working and trying to pick up your speed because, especially on frame rate, your speed matters quite a bit. As well as the quality, though, too, which is the crazy part. You don't get your scene, you don't get paid for your scene until it's approved. So now you have to be fast, but also up to the quality of the show. So starting out, it can be very rough because of those reasons. And you can also, like, there's tons of times where you might make less than minimum wage. There was one project I worked on, not at that studio, where I was making quite a bit less than minimum wage just because of the entire situation, multiple factors, and I was not like enjoying it at all. I was working 7 days a week and still not making enough money. It's crazy.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So like, okay.
Oh, but I should be positive. It's fun. Animation's really fun.
You don't have to be positive. I mean, we should, but we should also be realistic about the realities and stuff. Like, has that improved over the years since you've been like going up the ranks?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And not even just going up the ranks, being at the right studios helps a lot too. Like there's some great studios that don't do that to people. And the fact that all the studios are shifting to salary is a very good thing to protect that kind of from that situation happening.
Okay. That's
so good. Like it's animation's awesome. Like if I guess if that situation had been that bad, I wouldn't still be here, right? Like there was always a positive, but it can get bad, right? It can get bad sometimes.
Yeah. Oh, so true. Well, I'm glad it's getting better. And I hope that salary thing goes to all the studios and they figure out how to do that. For your like first gig and your first few scenes, like what was it like seeing the final animated piece and seeing your scenes go across screen?
Oh, it's so much fun. Right. You see your scene on there, even though you might only have it there for a few seconds. You say, oh, look, I did that. And then the scene's gone. And then you see your name in the credits. And it's very rewarding. I think mostly for like that first show when you're like, yes, I'm on TV. Well, it's my name, but it's me. So it is very rewarding once your name is there on the credits.
So you're currently a supervising animator on Dino Ranch. Like, can you go into what a supervising animator does?
My main job is to help the animators. So with their questions, if they want to know how to set up a scene or if they think there's a technical issue wrong with the scene, they'll come to me with questions and we'll try and solve it. Secondly, I would say is the revisions and notes. When they submit scenes, I have a look at them. They'll say this scene's ready to submit to look at. I'll take a look at it. I'll analyze it for animation. Like I'll say maybe we can push this animation a bit more. Or maybe because they were so focused on making the animation beautiful, they didn't realize like a foot is going into the ground, which is like a super easy, tiny thing for them to fix, but I'll just send it back for something small like that. So it ranges from animation fixes to tiny little technical fixes. And other than revisions and helping the animators out, after that, I have my own scenes that I need to fix every week. And as well as giving revisions, I analyze the next week's episode. So basically going through the entire episode, scene by scene, checking how many characters are in each scene, what are they doing? Because if the action is really complicated, I can't really give that scene to a junior animator. So I divide up the scenes based on difficulty, and that way it's ready for me to divide up to the animators based on their skills. And other than that, yeah, it's just basically throwing scenes around depending on who's available. That's pretty much it.
Yeah. So like, because it sounds like you're adjusting other people's scenes a lot and doing a lot of supervisory tasks, obviously. But like, do you miss having your own scene to fully animate yourself?
Yes, absolutely. I think anyone who starts in animation would miss it too if you're just doing like administration work or managerial work, I guess. Yeah. I do miss creating scenes and just like playing with the characters. So anytime I get to fix a scene, I'm happy just being able to tweak like the blink or something. Nice. Like, oh, it's like I'm animating again.
That's awesome. Like, so when you became a supervisor, like how did you adapt to being a leader or, you know, a manager?
I guess the first thing I noticed was that my success is the animator's success. Like they need to succeed for me to succeed. And I can't just be off on my own and being selfish and just doing my own scene as best I can. Like I'm there to help them. So to adapt, I prioritized their work over mine. If they needed help with something, like I just drop everything I do that is mine and help them because that is priority number one. So basically my stuff is second now. The animator stuff is first, and it's actually really nice to be able to help people. You get to learn a lot because everyone has different problems, and now you know how to fix all of the problems. It's great.
Yeah. I'm sure you get hit with some very interesting problems to solve that you probably never expected you'd have to do.
Yeah. Yes, definitely. Characters just – or rigs misbehaving or acting choices. Or it's all there. It's really fun. Yeah.
So you had mentioned you started out in Flash, but Dino Ranch is CG. So like where along the path did you learn how to, you know, animate 3D?
I learned in school initially, actually. I guess we're going back to that. The first year of my college program was done traditionally. They teach all hand-drawn on paper animation just to get you started with like the principles. Then in second year for us, we got to choose, do we want to be in 2D or 3D? I picked 3D. So it was actually in college that I did 3D, but right out of it, I got a job in 2D. And because Ottawa had no 3D pipeline, it was 4 or 5 years before I actually got back into 3D. It was a show called The Polos at Jamfield. It was my first Jamfield job and my first 3D job in Ottawa.
Very cool. Like, was it difficult to pick back up after so many years, like with software updates and everything?
Oh, yeah, a little. Yeah, for sure. I was doing some things that you do in 2D animation, like keying every frame or keying every second frame, and that doesn't work in 3D. It makes it look very jittery. So there was a few things, but essentially I just did what I was doing on all of my other projects, is I just worked a ton of extra hours until I was up to the same level in 3D that I was in 2D.
Very cool. In talking about Dino Ranch, like what do you love most about supervising on Dino Ranch?
I love the variety of the characters. Dino Ranch is fun because it's got quadrupeds, bipeds, it's got flying dinosaurs, and it's got humans. So you got like this really wide variety of different types of animals and humans. And then there's a range of characters with different personalities. You got those tin horn kids who are just causing trouble. And then you have the dino ranchers. They're different personalities. So it's fun. It has variety. And variety is awesome, and I just, it makes things more interesting.
Yeah. What's your favorite dinosaur and why?
Oh, it's definitely Clover.
Yeah.
Clover, he's so cute. It's because he's timid and super clumsy with his long neck, and he makes the weirdest noises. Sometimes he sounds like he's underwater for some reason. I don't know.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, he's super cute.
So, like, how do you research how each dinosaur will move in the show?
Mainly, the research is done, I would say, at the beginning of the production. And we get direction on how to treat the different dinosaurs based on their personalities and the people as well. So, for the three dinos, the main guys, Clover, Blitz, and Tango, we were given different dog personalities so that we would be basically following those different dogs' traits for the dinos. And other than that, the research that we do, if we need to do it, is only for very specific scenes. Like if we need to do a very specific action, or the director has a specific call or wants to see something move a very specific way, and you kind of can't just guess at what you're trying to hit. So our director, Corey, he goes over the entire episode every week with us and is just like, this is how I want this to happen. This is the motion I want here for the cart, if the cart is drifting, that kind of thing. So yeah, in the middle of production, because things are so fast paced, we don't have a chance to really sit down, research, and like study movement videos. We just kind of have to go, go, go. Mm-hmm. But at the very beginning, we're given sort of a guide of their personalities.
That's cool. That's really cool. Can you, I don't know if you deal with this in your role, but can you talk about calisthenics and rig tests and what the back and forth is like with that?
So for the rig tests, we do mainly like the rig tests, I'd say, also at the beginning of the production, especially for the main characters. Mm-hmm. So it's like, when we're preparing the library animation. So the animation library is where we hold all of our like run cycles, walk cycles, poses, like default poses that we can drop on the different characters. So if we notice something is off on the rig, then we'll send it back to rigging then. Any other rig changes that we ask for might be in the middle of production, and it'll just be something that was like quickly missed on the rig. But it's so fast paced that we don't really do too much back and forth, other than if it's a very important rig.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. It's nice that you have it streamlined so that it's just quick.
Yeah, rigging is great. Like they're a very fast working department that it's just amazing at what they do with the short amount of time that they have and so many characters to make for every single week. Because we're animating an episode every single week, which is crazy.
Wait, so, like, I don't know. Like a whole episode in a week?
Yeah. So it's a 10-minute episode. We animate every single week. Yeah.
That's so insane.
Yeah. So rigging has to like keep up with that. So they are like working crazy fast, and for the speed that they work, the quality is great.
Wow, that's so amazing. So like when you're passing out, because you went into kind of how you assign shots to different folks earlier, but like, with CG, is it a similar process? Does one animator animate everything in that scene?
Yes, exactly. I would say pretty much. So they get, maybe not effects, that's why I'm saying pretty much. Other than that, all the characters, the props, and any vehicles, if there are any in the scene, will be animated by that one animator. So it's not like we get a specific character that you're assigned for the whole episode. It's you get a scene, and whatever's in that scene is yours. Wow.
That's cool that the animator gets to like put on different acting hats for each character in that sense. That's
yeah. Really neat.
What's your favorite thing about working on Dino Ranch?
I guess, I mean, it's sort of similar to what I said before, is like the variety of the characters. And it is more challenging than our last show. We were just working on Kingdom Force before this. The show is much more challenging, which is a good and a bad thing sometimes. But it's mostly a good thing, because it forces you to animate a little bit faster, but also animate to a little bit of a higher quality as well, because we're animating for both Disney and CBC right now, and like it's giving us a chance to kind of really push our limits in terms of animation. So it's also really nice to see at the very end, like Dino Ranch has some awesome lighting and effects happening at the very end. Like I love seeing our shots in comp. I think that's one of my favorite things about Dino Ranch is seeing the finished product afterwards. I'm like, oh, this actually looks pretty nice. Like for a kid's TV show, like this is looking pretty good.
Yeah. It's kind of gorgeous. Cool. Yeah. Oh,
thank you.
Like, because when you're animating it, you don't have all the textures or lighting effects and stuff like that on it. Does it ever get a little weird?
Oh, with the plain models on them?
Yeah.
We're used to it by now. It doesn't look too weird anymore. It gets weird when we see the finished render with the textures on it. You're like, oh, their hair is this color? Or, oh, his fins are blue. Like Blitz is just all red in our scenes, but he's got blue fins, I think, when he's rendered, which we didn't know.
Oh, how funny.
Yeah.
I know that when I used to be a coordinator and we'd receive layout, I believe, where it's not like fully animated yet, it's just like stepped out. We're always it's just funny to see the entire process. So that's really cool that you guys get so excited to see the final piece.
Oh yeah, every time.
I've only seen 3 episodes so far, but I really liked the Moonflower one. I might be forgetting the title, but it was beautiful. It. Yeah, that was so beautiful.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, the lighting did an amazing job. Like they made it look super magical. That and we didn't know it was going to look like that too. So it's exciting seeing all the effects and lighting and everything.
Yeah.
That's what I kind of like.
And the other thing I love about the show is that it's so heartfelt. And like, I don't know, like, do you have any advice for getting more heart into your scenes and into your animation?
I would think acting it out. So I'm just saying I know acting it out would make it more heartfelt. We don't always have the time to act it out, but if you want to make a scene more heartfelt, I would say slow things down. And yeah, I actually honestly probably just act it out, because how would, if you just sort of pose the character and go without thinking about it or without trying to feel it, it's not going to feel as heartfelt. But oh, in this show, what's really nice is the characters can actually hug each other. And in a lot of kids' shows, they can't, like, characters can't touch each other. It'll be like a weird show rule. But the characters can hug each other in this show, which is actually nice and realistic.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think some other shows have that rule?
I've never actually found an answer to it. I'm not actually too sure. Some broadcasters, I guess, or the creators of shows just don't want it in. Maybe it's just not, like, maybe it might just be like a personal space kind of rule. Mm-hmm. Like, don't get in on someone's personal space, don't hug or touch them. But in this show, it's done in a really nice way where you're like, oh yes, they're just their family and they love their dinosaurs and they're all just hugging. It's really nice. It's cute.
Yeah. I would have assumed like the touching thing might have been like, it's just really hard to animate and comp those things. Cause isn't it like when you're dealing with like a character and even a prop, like the interaction can be hard to track?
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. And like you can't, they have to be touching, but they can't be going into each other. And in 3D, we're always supposed to be watching out for that. But it definitely makes it more harder, like, or more difficult to fix and stuff. But it really adds to a scene.
Yeah, for sure. So. I really love, I always love shows, and Dino Ranch does this too, where like you can, like, you get some Walla like breathing and running and it just adds to the organic naturalness of it. And I feel like hugs are just like another level of that, making it feel very real.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's how people would act in a real situation.
Yeah. So when you would be animating a scene, how would you get in the zone?
Oh, for me, getting in the zone would be silence. And that is hard to achieve sometimes in a studio atmosphere. So if there is noise happening just around my desk, I just turn on music with noise-canceling headphones, and it kind of drowns out the music. Sometimes I do look up from my desk to see if it's commotion because there's free food being given out or if something fun is happening, that I'll join in. But if it's just people chatting and I need to work, then I just I just put on music. I also like working in front of a wall because the wall sort of blocks you everything visually. So that really helps.
Very cool. Is there any one really tangible tip that you could give to our audience about animating?
I would say this is something that I see coming up sometimes, is avoid having videos on your screen. A lot of people don't like this advice because they love their videos on their screen. But when you're starting out, try not to have a video playing in your field of view. Because if you have it up there, it's likely you're going to be looking at it. And I know some studios like to say it's okay to have videos up, but still, try not to have it there. You will probably be distracted, even if you've seen it before. And if you don't think you have, or if you don't think you will look at it and it's not distracting, try minimizing it. And is it still just as entertaining when it's minimized? And if it isn't, there's a good chance you're watching it and it's probably taking away from your productivity or your focus, let's say. But if you can get all your work done with the videos up, then you go for it. I guess that's one of my main tips, is try to avoid distractions. Be focused.
Yeah, that's a great tip. Yeah, I know a lot of designers and storyboard artists like their videos up here too. I think a lot of storyboard artists say that, like, when they're first doing like their rough pass, they'll only listen to music with no words, but then like when they're revising and stuff, they might have videos up. So it's probably like a similar thing where you have to like really use your head and really focus to get the first pass and all the details in.
Yes, absolutely. Like, I can see that for sure. Because it's the same thing for me too. Like, I'll have nothing up while I really need to focus and think or do lip sync or something. But as soon as that's done, I'll play music or something in the background. Because yeah. It also depends. You know yourself best. If it's not a distraction, then do what you want.
What is the best advice you've ever been given?
There are two pieces of advice that I really liked. The first one that probably really got my speed up was from one of the directors I used to work with in 2D, and his advice was reuse as much of your animation or other people's animation from the library as possible. When you're on frame rate, so you're getting paid per frame instead of per hour, that is extremely useful when you just want to get up to your quota, because you are no longer creating everything from scratch. And it's not a bad thing not to create everything from scratch. I know as artists, we all want to create something brand new. But when you're trying to produce a lot of animation, as we do in TV animation, you need to speed up a bit. So having animation like run cycles, walk cycles that you already have there that you can modify slightly instead of creating a brand new one is much better than creating something from scratch because of just time constraints. So that was one of the first times it clicked for me, and I was actually able to get my numbers up. And I'd say the second thing that was most, the best advice that was most helpful was from my current director, Corey Humes. He's advised me to set up my controllers on 3D characters and objects more wisely. Like, think about how the scene is going to be animated and how it's going to be set up. For example, if you have a character running in circles, you might place its main control down on the ground, and you might put its sub-controller, the controller right underneath that god controller, outside of it, and just spin your main control. So instead of having to animate this one control and key it so that it moves in a circle, you're now just spinning a single control. Stuff like that. It's very hard to describe verbally over a podcast, but setting up the controls properly at the beginning of your scene will help you a lot and save you time later in animation too.
No, that's brilliant. Like, mm-hmm. I know it is hard to describe such a visual thing over audio, but hopefully when the time comes for the listener to use this, it'll ring true. Yes. So come back when you're, that's amazing. That's really good advice. On the flip side, what's the worst advice you ever received and why?
Okay. So I couldn't think of anything And then I thought of one thing that is like, it'll sound slightly controversial when I get started, but once I explain, you'll understand and maybe it won't be so controversial. So the worst advice what I got was to not work any unpaid overtime. And I'll say right now that I agree to, like, to clarify, don't do unpaid overtime because of a poor organization within a production, like where it's set for you to, like, they need the animators to work 60 hours a week without those extra 20 being paid kind of thing. That's crappy. That no one wants to work in a situation like that. What I mean is do unpaid, like do your own overtime for your own personal gain to get faster, because if you're trying to get those, let's say experience points, or if you're trying to learn new techniques and you're in an industry, you're working with people who have been there for years and years and years. So even just working like 1 or 2 hours extra per day will help you get faster and help you get better faster. So that's sort of what I meant by that was the worst piece of advice. It's when you're starting out, don't just limit yourself to like a 7 or an 8 hour work day. If you have the energy and you're able to, try and put in 1 or 2 extra hours for yourself, just for your own personal gain, so that you can even just have fun with it. Like you could go home, I guess, and work on an animation just to try and like figure out how to animate something specifically. If you're like, oh, I did this one scene, I wish I could have explored that more. Go home and try it again there. Just do a couple extra hours and it'll really help you in the long run, because you will end up getting faster. The more you do something, the faster you'll be at it.
Yeah, very true and very controversial.
It is, isn't it?
I feel like everything could be controversial, though. It's like, yeah, do it for the right reasons. Don't do it because you're being guilted into it, or like let it exactly. be your choice to improve your own stuff. Yeah, I think that's great. So you've worked on a couple shows at a couple studios now. Can you offer some comforting words to someone about the roll off their show and are looking for the next job?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you have been working on a show and your contract is ending, you did something right. If you're there until the contract is done, or let's say your show ends a little bit before your contract's up, you did something right because you finished that contract. They kept you on for the whole production. And animation contracts are so short that it happens all the time. It happens to everyone. You are going to have to hop studios or wait it out till the next production. That's not your fault. When you're starting out, you're up against the people who've been in it for years. So I would say the best thing you can do is to talk to your supervisor or your director and find out what you did right and what you could improve on. And that way, when you're rolling off the show, you'll have this list of things that you can work on and you can improve on in between this job and your potential next job. And yeah, I would just say make sure that you're friendly and consistent, and you'll probably get work quite a lot.
Like, wow, are you hearing all of this? You know, improving your skills, navigating the workplace, moving up the, you know, power hierarchy. Like, that has to take a lot out of a person. Like, how do you take care of yourself, like self-care, and maintain balance?
I like to eat healthy, or I try to. I was before the COVID situation happened. For some reason, now that I'm at home, I'm eating much worse. I had ice cream for lunch one day with sprinkles.
That sounds great.
It was really good, and I didn't feel guilty about it, and that's when good. I was like, wow. but most of the time, exercise is very important. It actually gives you more energy. You think that I would have thought that running around or lifting weights would make you more tired, but it doesn't. You actually get way more energized after it, and it really helps you with your self-esteem and confidence and everything, and just overall strength. So I exercise right now with yoga because it's easy to do online, like virtual classes. And before that, I did kettlebell. Mm-hmm. So that's essentially how I self-care is just exercise, and I try to eat healthy, but not right now. Right now I eat ice cream for lunch sometimes.
Perfect. So as a supervising animator, you have influence over who gets hired into animation positions. So like when you're looking at portfolios and reels, like what is the thing you look for most when hiring?
So the main thing that we look for is strong timing and posing. And probably the most important thing is timing and posing. And you'll hear it from so many people too, not just us. It's probably tiresome to hear. But just keep working on your timing and your posing. Like, nothing else really matters in your reel. It doesn't matter if your reel is 5 minutes long if it's got bad timing in it. Or it doesn't matter if you've made this epic scene with 10 characters in it, like jumping around each other, if it doesn't look right. Right? So if you can make a reel that looks professional and has some nice shots in it with characters that are properly animated with nice timing, nice posing, the lip sync works well, then you've got a pretty good shot.
Would you rather see, because like not every animator is a good character designer or a character model or a rigger, like when you see something that's been clearly done by the individual, the entire process, like are you only looking at the animation and how do you kind of block out like any like not as well modeled, rigged kind of things?
If we're hiring for animation, we only look at animation. So that's pretty easy. Even if the rig is a little bit weird, if the timing is really solid, then we'll say, okay, that does look good. Like, look what they're able to do with this. It doesn't matter too much if the rig or the model isn't great, but I think it would be much easier on someone who's applying to be an animator to use a rig that's free online, that's already got maybe some of the kinks worked out. So it might be better to just use a pre-made rig and then just focus on the animation only, so then you don't have to focus all your time on the other things.
That's what I was hoping you would say.
Yeah. It's better to focus on one.
Yeah, kind of like what you were talking about earlier with like reusing certain like drawings and cycles. It's like easier, not harder. You don't have to reinvent the wheel here.
Exactly.
Like, make it easier for you. So like when you are hiring, like do you like how do you keep representation in mind?
So we do try to, I mean, personally, I'll just go with me because I know myself a little bit better. I just like to look at the art. The art should be it represents the person and their skills. I think that as a studio and in the animation industry, we could make more of an effort, I guess, to be a bit more diverse. I don't really get to be like the final decision, so it's really hard for me to say. But it would be nice to see a little bit more diversity in the animation team and the industry as a whole.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any resources where people could improve their skills? Because like Steve Martin says, like, be so good they can't ignore you. So like, how can someone get so good you can't ignore them?
I would say watch animation tutorials online. There's a lot of really good ones. And I believe Animation Mentor has some good tutorials. I'd have to double check that. But basically, just focus on the one thing you want to do. If you put all of your time and effort into that one thing, then you will have a better chance of getting into that one thing. So if you want to be the best at it, just focus on it. If you want animation, do that. It's hard to get into one thing when you've split your efforts and your focus into two. Mm-hmm. And we are just judging based on the animation. As far as I know, when I look at a reel, I've forgotten what the name was that I saw at the beginning, and I don't know like who they are or anything. I'm only looking at the animation. And then if we see the animation, we're like, yes, that's exactly, we want this person. See if they're available. So I would say focus on your animation only. And books, actually. There's the Animator Survival Kit. That's a really good one.
Classic.
Yes. And then the animation Crash Course, I think. Two very good books.
Yes. Is mentorship important to you? Do you like mentor the animators coming up behind you?
Absolutely. So day to day, we have revisions and stuff, so we can give pointers on animation once you're working in the studio, but we also occasionally go to teach at the college. So last year I was teaching a 3D animation course at Algonquin, where I went to school, and just basically teaching the students what we want to see in 3D animation in the industry. And now I even still have a couple students that email me from time to time asking for revisions, even though I'm not their teacher anymore. It doesn't really matter, but I'm more than happy to review their work for them and just tell them straight up, like, this is what you need to fix in this scene, this is what looks really good, and just sort of encourage the people who wanted to continue with 3D to mm-hmm. work on specific things.
That's awesome. It's really cool that you do that. Like, how do you make time in your schedule for it?
I guess if I'm already on the computer or just finishing up my shift, I'll just stay on, like, open the email that I got and take a look at the scene, and then just sit there for anywhere from 10 to 20 minutes to half an hour to just do some drawovers, do some fixes. So it's basically part of my work day, essentially. They don't come in too often now, but when they do come in, I just take some time within. I try to get back to them within 3 days to give them some pointers, because it is kind of fun, like, helping other people excel. And it's fun to see them when they do succeed. Like, when the students were getting better and better and looking at their first projects to their last ones, it was really rewarding.
Oh, that's awesome. That's so cool.
Yeah.
So we're going to be closing up here in a moment, but first, okay, Let's celebrate a little bit. Like, who is your favorite fictional character and why?
This was sort of difficult to come up with. There's so many good ones. Yeah, I'm going to be a little bit, because predictable, and I'm going to say Bilbo Baggins. He's so reluctant to do anything and is so comfortable in his home, but he just sort of gets dragged along on an adventure, and I just love that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who's your favorite creator, artist, writer, animator, whoever, like, and why?
I should be more original. So maybe I should just say Howard Shore, but I'll say Peter Jackson and Howard Shore for their adaptation of Lord of the Rings.
I love it.
Yeah, I just, like, the whole reason I wanted to do animation or video games or any of it was because of Lord of the Rings and, like, movies like that. So I'm going to have to give it to them. It's such, like, a classic movie. I just love it.
Yeah.
Well, and the music was beautiful, too. So that's why Howard Shore.
That's awesome. And I love that you're so, like, you have this theme and you are sticking to it.
I am. But I went to New Zealand.
You did? Oh my gosh.
Yeah, sorry. I went there on a 1 month long trip just for, like, with a friend Shauna. We went for a 1 month Lord of the Rings trip.
That's
it
awesome.
It was amazing.
That's on my bucket list too, so envious.
Oh, yes.
So glad you got to go. You know, in talking about, you know, Lord of the Rings and World of Warcraft again, like, Dino Ranch and, you know, a lot of these shows that you've worked on are so not in the same style or vein. Like, but it's just, like, one stop on your overall career, right? So, like, is that kind of what you would like to shoot for in the future, you think?
I've sort of changed my goal, I guess. I don't even know if I have a set goal, because I've been enjoying TV animation so much, and a show like Dino Ranch is still really entertaining, and I don't really feel the need to, like, move into VFX or game animation just yet. Now I feel that I'm just working on the projects that interest me. Like, I'll just take them if they're interesting. I would love to work on, like, the Lord of the Rings TV series. That might be cool. But I feel like right now Dino Ranch is so much fun, and working for Jamfield is so great that, especially just comparing it to my entire experience working in animation, that I'm just happy being on Dino Ranch. I don't feel the need to jump there, but I would if the time was right and it seemed like a good idea.
Yeah. No, I think it's brilliant. Like, you always have, like, these, like, things that you'd like to do, but it's nice where we are, and, like, you never know where you're going to end up either. So that's really cool. So Peter Jackson, Caitlin is listening, if you want to contact her, because I know he listens to the podcast.
Oh, he does?
No, he does. Oh. How crazy would that be? So who are you digging right now that we should check out? So this is like promote other folks online or social media or just anyone that you want to promote.
Oh, there's a few. And do I give you their names after? Because I want to share their links.
Yes.
Okay,
then,
after. Okay.
I can put that in the notes and everything. But yes.
Yes, awesome. Okay, there's a few. So there's this person I just discovered, Erica Worthylake. She does some really awesome horse drawings, which I just love. I love horses too. So you should check her out. There's also my friend Sarah Ann Davis, who's just taken a break from animation to work on her online comic, which is really cool.
Oh, it's so nice.
Yeah, so that is pretty awesome. And there's just two more. They're both animators on my team, but they're painters. And one is Anastasia Boguslavskaya, and one is Scott Ferguson. I need to share their links with you after, because they do some beautiful paintings. Like, amazing.
Awesome. I can't wait to see it and to share it with everybody. So, almost final question. What is something that you know now that you wish you knew when you first started?
I wish I knew that there were really good studios to work for and that I don't have to sacrifice all of my free time, and I don't have to settle for a job that's not paying very well. Like, I'd left that situation a little bit sooner. Even though I learned a lot and I worked really hard and I was able to work through it, I do wish that I'd sort of maybe tried a different place out before just staying there and kind of suffering a little bit too long. Like, Jamfield is an awesome studio, and and there are other awesome studios that I've worked for as well. And I just wanted to say that if you're ever finding yourself in a place where you're like, this is awful, this is like I'm not happy at all, I can never keep up, like, I can never catch up, it could be because of the working environment, and your working environment doesn't have to be really, really bad. So look around, and if other people are also experiencing the same stresses constantly, then it's probably a pretty toxic workplace and you should probably leave. So, yeah, there are really nice studios out there. You should look for them. Don't keep working there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's great advice. Where can people find you online if you want to be found?
I just made a website. So, yeah, I'm CaitlinMenard.com. That's basically it.
Good branding. Dino Ranch is out now on CBC and Disney Junior. It comes out every Monday at 12 p.m. in each time zone, and it'll be on the Disney Now app once it's premiered, after the premiere. Thank you for coming on the show, Caitlin. This has been wonderful.
Thank you, Cassie. It was really nice talking to you.
It's really nice talking to you.
The Ink and Paint Folk podcast is produced in partnership with Women in Animation, an organization dedicated to advancing women in the field of animation and reaching 50-50 by year 2025. Learn more at womeninanimation.org. Please also check out other great organizations and groups promoting diversity in the industry. Black and Animated, Rise Up Animation, Latinx in Animation, Asian Queens in Animation, and Diverse Toons. This episode was produced by me, with the magic of the internet from beautiful Burbank, California. Music by Grace Tsai and TV's Kyle. Special thanks to Nicole Schroeder. All opinions expressed here are our own and do not represent those of our respective employers. Until next time, this has been the Ink and Paint Folk Podcast. Stay colorful.